Today we're going to take a look at a subject that's been bandied about ever since I can remember first coming into the church, and that is with regard to end time prophecies, in particular the characteristics of the Antichrist. So I jumped on the internet and said, well, I'll see what the world has to say about the Antichrist. One of the first things that came up with on my internet search engine was Snopes saying, no, Obama is not the Antichrist. And I'm thinking, well, I think maybe I better look a little deeper into who the Antichrist is, because we've heard about this. So let's take a look. And one thing that we have to realize is if we're going to be able to identify the Antichrist, you're going to have to know the difference between the real Jesus Christ and then the false Christ. In Matthew 24, verse 24, for false Christs and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. What the suggestion is it may be possible if you can't tell the difference. Now, some of you may know that I have twin daughters, and these twin daughters went to summer camp at age 16, down in Fort Worth, Texas. And sure enough, I got this picture where they had taken a face mask or put on this night mask. And of course, the odd part about this particular camp is that there were two sets of identical twin girls, teenagers, and two sets of identical twin boys, all at the same camp. The way I heard it from the staffers, everybody was getting a nervous breakdown, never knowing who they'd talk to last and who they were talking to next, because they couldn't tell the difference. So after camp, of course, we spent some time here, went down the road, and my parents can't tell the difference. My wife can't tell the difference. And I'm looking really close. I can't tell the difference. Now, they're grown, and their husbands apparently can tell the difference, which is fortunate. But the question is which one is which? Well, here we have a picture of twins, and then we have a picture of sisters who are not twins. Is this helpful? Well, you say, well, maybe we really better know them better in order to be able to tell the difference. Incidentally, the ones on the right are 8 years apart in age, but when they're both adults, there's a certain similarities that come. As a school teacher each year, I would start the school off to try to get the students, and I would give them this picture of four girls and say, can you pick out the twins? And as the teenagers, girls know, and everybody else, hair color is not necessarily definitive. So generally, I label them A, B, C, D, and then they would go through the guessing process, and we record how many guesses for A and B, B and C, C and D, A and C, A, and so forth through it. And generally, it was A and D were the number one guesses, and B and C were two, and they would be wrong because it's B and D. But that's the way it is. But that's because there were four. It's really hard to tell when you have more of them. So now let's narrow it down. Ah, there's only three of the girls there. At least we can tell the two of them who are twins, right? Or so we think. Well, this whole introduction is because in order to compare the difference, we must know who God is in order to compare who God is not, who the Jesus Christ of our knowledge is compared to who is not. And not only do we need to know who this God is that we worship, but what is God's plan? Because if we understand what God's plan is, it helps us to get a big picture of the events that are being played out before us. And then as we've heard a bit about the sermon today by Dr. Baker, what is our place in God's plan? So if we kind of keep these questions in mind, is to help us to know the difference between the false Christs and the Antichrist. Now, we're given some clue in Isaiah 28 and verse 10, where to go to find the answers in Isaiah 28:10, because if we're going to know the Antichrist, we're going to have to look around God's word. And that calls, the prophet Isaiah said, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. We aren't going to find this all laid out in one place like it's a lineup at the police station and pick out the guilty party. So we're going to have to do a little searching today. And one of the things that I came across was in the New King James Bible, that There's a difference when they label the small a for Antichrist compared to the capital A for Antichrist. They're saying, in fact, 1 John 2:18 puts them both in the same verse. In 1 John 2:18, little children, it is the last hour, and as you have heard, the Antichrist is coming. Even now, many Antichrists have come, by which we know it is the last hour, meaning the end times. Well, when I looked up the word they use for Antichrist in each case, in Strong's Concordance, I looked up G500. It's the same in both of these words. They don't have a G500 with a capital A and a G500 with a small a. But a reference here was, but the translators are putting it out to put an upper or lower case. So we're looking back into it. 1 John 2:22. We're recognizing characteristics of the Antichrist. Who is a liar but he who denies that Jesus is the Christ, meaning the Messiah? He is Antichrist, meaning against Jesus, who denies the Father and the Son. Well, the first thing that popped up in my mind here is I'm going faster down the highway, and I'm going, wait a minute. Apparently, there doesn't say there's a Trinity here. It says he is Antichrist who denies the Father and the Son. It was just a little aside. But an Antichrist is in denial of reality of God the Father and Jesus Christ. However, that is not simply a verbal concept. Somebody says, I deny, I deny, I deny. No, it doesn't have to be that way. If we look in Titus 1:16. In Titus 1:16, they profess to know God, meaning with their words, but in works they deny him, being abominable, disobedient, and disqualified for every good work. So it isn't just somebody saying, I believe, but then they go about and do something completely different that shows that they deny the knowledge and understanding of God and Jesus Christ. So we see this. It says, Antichrist who denies the Father and the Son. Just to be sure, anybody who is seeing this later, I think everybody in the room knows, but they're speaking here of Jesus Christ is the Word. In John 1, verses 1 through 3, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. So we have this description of God the Father and Jesus Christ being of the God family. If we extend this on, we're in John 1, we look at verse 14, John 1:14, where it explains it more clearly. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, and the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. So this Word that was there at the beginning became human flesh, which was Jesus Christ. Now, we're in the book, a Gospel of John. Let's go to 1 John in chapter 4 and verse 3. In 1 John chapter 4 and verse 3, and every spirit that does not confess that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is not of God. And this is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard was coming and is now already in the world. Well, there's a clue that this spirit of Antichrist is already here, the resistance to Jesus Christ. Now we're in, and let's go to 2 John in 1 and chapter 1 and verse 7. For many deceivers have gone out into the world who do not confess Jesus as coming in the flesh. They're in denial, or if they knew it, they're trying to deceive others. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. So the New King James puts a small a here, an antichrist. And there are lots of them, hundreds, thousands, millions, perhaps billions, that do not have an understanding of the reality of truth. So now let's take a look what Paul wrote to the Thessalonians, who was warning us in 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 3. Let no one deceive you by any means, for the day will not come unless the falling away comes first, and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition. And he's referring to this end time return of Jesus Christ. What's going to happen first? Is the man of sin revealed? the son of perdition. Well, these are new terms. How often do we throw the term perdition around in our daily conversation, right? And man of sin? Well, let's look a little deeper. We'll go to John 17, verse 12. While I was with them in the world, I kept them in your name. Jesus Christ is talking about those who follow the truth. Those whom you gave me, I've kept, and none of them is lost except the son of perdition, that the scripture might be being fulfilled. Well, there's that word perdition again. So let's look it up in Strong's Concordance in G684. Perdition is translated as destruction, waste, damnable, to die, to perish, or being pernicious. This same word, perdition, shows up in Matthew 7:13 when Jesus said, "Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many that go by it." So this perdition, meaning the son of falsehood, the son that leads you to destruction or to perish. So we have to be careful of the man of sin, whoever is leading us or humanity toward destruction. So some of the terminology we're living today, an antichrist, the antichrist, man of sin or son of perdition, and then we have this abomination of desolations. So we have these terms. Now this abomination of desolations was first referred to by the prophet Daniel, and Jesus was saying in Matthew 24:15, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand." Well, that's kind of ominous, isn't it? It says abomination of desolation. And, well, if you read the book of Daniel, you would have known that there was something bad that had occurred back then. So let's take a look at the book of Daniel. And Daniel the prophet wrote in Daniel 9:27, "Then he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week." And this we're speaking of the Antichrist, which we'll come to see. "But in the middle of the week, he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering. And on the wing of abominations shall be one who makes desolate, even until the consummation, which is determined, is poured out on the desolate." So this abomination is something that's horrifying, repulsive, and highly divisive. This Daniel goes on in 11:31. In Daniel 11:31, "And the forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress, and they shall take away the daily sacrifices, and place there the abomination of desolation." So we have this man of sin, the son of perdition, is going to take away the daily sacrifices and then do this, what they called, the scripture calls, abomination of desolation. But Daniel continues on, "And from that time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days, which is 3.5 years. So let's take a little bit deeper look. What is Daniel talking about, and what is Jesus saying about this abomination of desolation? Well, if we take a look at extra-biblical sources of what has happened in history. Now, today the sermon talked about 1177 B.C. That's about 1,200 years before the ministry of earthly ministry of Christ, when there was a collapse, a Bronze Age collapse. But this Antiochus IV was a successor to Alexander the Great. Now, Alexander the Great, I think, died, 323, thereabouts, before Christ. So he was in power with the greatest, one of the great world empires, stretching from Greece to India and all parts in between. And when he died, and as a young man in his 30s, his empire was split up into four ways. And one of those four was Antiochus Epiphanes. And this was about where he came to rule about 200 years prior to the crucifixion of Christ. So we have this Antiochus IV or Antiochus Epiphanes. What did he try to do? Well, he wanted to convert everybody in all of his domain, in one-fourth of the Roman, of the Greek Empire, will all follow the Greek religion and Greek culture. And that means we're going to abolish all your other religions and cultures. And so you'll just have to quit keeping the Sabbath, quit worshiping on your holy days, treat them all like every other day. Don't worry about what's clean and unclean. We'll take care of that. We'll force upon you all of these issues. Now, and unfortunately, many followed that. Now, there were many that resisted. This is between the time of Daniel the prophet and the birth of Jesus Christ. So he attempted this mass conversion. And of course, the main Greek god was the god Zeus, if you've recalled your history. And so what could he do to antagonize all the religions in the area? Well, just do the opposite and follow the Greek mythology or Greek religion. And one of the more ultimate things that he did, and we find from extra-biblical sources, is that in order to honor Zeus, he went to the temple in Israel, in Jerusalem, and he offered swine's flesh on the altar in the temple, which was his attempt to try to get rid of the Hebrew people's worship of their God by just doing abominable things that they simply couldn't tolerate, force them to tolerate it to the best that this emperor could do. And it's interesting, though, this was a couple hundred years before Jesus Christ made his prophecy about the coming abomination of desolations. In other words, that had already occurred. Well, wait a minute here. If it had already occurred, why did Christ say we should, in Matthew 24:15, what that had to happen first? In other words, it was a future event. So it brings to mind something we call the duality of prophecy, where things will happen at least twice and sometimes more than twice. So we have this characteristic or this understanding of duality of prophecy. Yes, a form of it may have happened, but it's going to happen again in our end time. So now let's take a look at some of the checklist of characteristics. This is not an exhaustive checklist. This is a checklist. Okay, so feel free to add more if you find more. This we know about the Antichrist in Revelation 13:6, that he blasphemes the true God. In Revelation 13:6, he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. Well, that's pretty bold. But then if you're opposing Christ, that's what you do. You come right out and say it. There's another way to do that. So the first characteristic is blasphemes the true God. Now, a lot of people do that. So a lot of people would be qualify on step one, right? But not so many people qualify on the second characteristic of the Antichrist, pretending to be God. Now, if we've taken a look at the false prophet or the story of that one, rising out of the beast power, rising out of the sea, wants to be worshipped. To do that, pretends to be God. You should worship then this Antichrist. And yet, as we read in Thessalonians 2, verses 3 and 4, this Antichrist opposes and exalts himself above all that is counted God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Where's the temple of God? Now, we can think of a physical temple, but it also means in your heart, in each of you. Are you replacing the true God with an artifice, a false Antichrist? So, and this is the warning that Paul wrote to the Thessalonians, saying, better be aware of this. So the second characteristic is pretends to be God. Third characteristic is performs miracles. In 2 Thessalonians 2, in verses 9 through 12, we have the coming of the lawless one, Earlier we looked at man of sin, son of perdition. Now the term is lawless one. According to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. And for this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie. In other words, allow it to happen, and they may be condemned who did not believe the truth but had pleasure in unrighteousness. So there's going to be powers with signs and lying wonders. Now, wouldn't that amaze you? Something that comes in front of you? Well, pretty convincing, after all, right? Only people with power from God can do those sort of things. And yet we read that under the power of Satan, there can be appear to be signs and lying wonders. Kind of reminds me of Groucho Marx, who once said, "Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?" So, number three, performs miracles. Don't be deceived. Number four, appears to come back from the dead. Appears to come back from the dead. In Revelation 13, verse 14, "And he receives those who dwell on earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived." In other words, there's apparently a mortal injury, but somehow it's still around. So this would be astounding. We don't know the form of that, how it will take, but we know that we know these words are there and that they're true. So number four appears to come back from the dead, because a mortal injury means it's to death. Number five, exercises authority around the world. Exercises authority around the world. In Revelation 13, verses 5 and 7, "And he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies." We've heard that before. "And he was given authority to continue for 42 months. We read that before, 3.5 years. Now verse 7, "It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation." That's pretty much around the world. Every tribe, tongue, and nation? Well, every language, with over 4,000 languages, that pretty well covers the world. Nation is a people, tribes within nations. So that's a lot of authority over them. Now, do they all follow the authority? Let's hope not. I certainly don't want to be one of those that follows that authority. But the Antichrist characteristic, exercising authority around the world. Number six, controls the world economy. Controls the world economy, number six, in Revelation 13 and verse 16. This one we hear a bit about. "He causes all, both great and small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or their foreheads, that no one may buy or sell except the one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name." So that's pretty demonstrative of controlling the economy. Look what happened the last couple of years. We had governments around the world that attempted to control the economy by issuing directives. In many cases, tried to shut down churches from meeting, said you can't meet unless you're groups that are either not at all or not more than 10 people, and you had to follow all the certain protocols. Businesses could not be open and so forth unless you had certain protocols, like lots of contributions to their political campaigns. Apparently big ticket businesses could remain open, but mom-and-pop stores could not. Ultimate control. So we saw a lot of places go out of business. Couldn't buy or sell. It was too bad for them, and we suffer the effects of that today. So controlling the world economy, that's going to be a sign that's coming down. You know, we've only had some flavor of this so far. It's going to get more severe. Number seven, violates or desecrates the temple. We read a little earlier about the abomination of desolation. This is what Jesus' prophecy was in Matthew 24, starting in verse 15. "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand." And then it goes on to explain, as in Daniel 12, the daily sacrifices were abolished. Well, you go, wait a minute. In order for the daily sacrifices to be abolished, they have to be established again. And that hasn't quite happened yet. So we can look to that as a clue that that the daily sacrifices will resume, in order for them to be abolished at the time of the that the false prophet or the Antichrist makes the sacrifice that we call the abomination of desolations. Another characteristic we read in Daniel 11, 21 through 24, that this Antichrist makes war and distributes the plunder to his followers. Well, that sounds your average politician today who gets into power, right? Goes to war against people that they don't like and then collects money to support their own power. So this is not unusual, but it's done on a worldwide basis. So number seven, violates and desecrates the temple. We're looking here at the abomination of desolation, replacing the daily sacrifices or stopping them, and then instituting a false sacrifice. I have for number eight, attempts to destroy Israel. And here we just have to read the chapter of Daniel 11. Many of those things are written there. We don't have the time today, but I just going, whoa, all of the stuff in Daniel 11 that's showing there, including breaking treaties, making nice, like they're going to be your friend. Isn't that always the best kind of friend to have, one that will stab you in the back at the first opportunity? Well, that's what was happening here, making nice, playing as if there was a treaty that was valid and then breaking those treaties. And like I say, we can read further in Daniel 11, but that really is a separate message all by itself. Number ninth characteristic of the Antichrist that I have recorded today, makes war against the return of Jesus Christ. In Revelation 19 and in verse 19, I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him who sat on the horse and his army. They're speaking of the return of Jesus Christ. So makes war against the return of Christ. We can read in other places in Revelation 17, 12, 10 kings who fight the Jesus Christ return. Those are all organized and followers of this Antichrist. They're just part of the program. Now, there are probably other characteristics, so I want to mention that. That's my the caveat, so that when I get emails or telephone calls that says, hey, you forgot about X, Y, or Z, okay, fine. All the further we're going today at these characteristics, acknowledging that there may be more. So we have blasphemes the true God, pretends to be God in place of God, performs miracles, seems to come back from the dead, exercises authority around the world, controls the world economy, violates the temple, attempts to destroy Israel, and makes war against the return of Jesus Christ. The bottom line issue for each one of us is, are we capable of being deceived? Now, I can't tell you which one of these girls is which. This happened to be at the Scandinavian Festival in Junction City, Oregon, many years ago. If I get really close and at a certain angle, I can see that one of them has a tiny little chicken pox mark between the eye and the hairline, but you got to be close because it's about the size of a pinhead. That's a challenge. We have to do better than that when it comes to discerning the true Jesus Christ and the false Christ of the false prophets, as it says in Matthew 24, 24, because they're also going to show signs and wonders and will attempt to deceive. Now, let's go back to the beginning of this message that we took a look at the questions that we must address in our individual lives. In order to know what's happening, we have to know who is God. We have to have a relationship with that God to have a better understanding of how to compare against the Antichrist. We have to know what God's plan is. As we heard in Dr. Baker's sermon, we have to watch. We have to be prepared. So knowing what God's plan is, so it isn't a surprise. I don't like bad surprises. Sometimes I'm even uncomfortable with good ones. So we need to watch what is God's plan, and it's laid out. We have it here in the Bible. The third question, of course, is where do we fit? What's our place in God's plan? So once we understand that, we then can be comforted by this understanding of knowing our place in God's plan. And that means, if we look at 1 Peter 3 and verse 15, I have this in the English Standard Version. But in your hearts, honor Christ the Lord as holy, meaning special, set apart, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason of the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect. So we should build with this knowledge, with this understanding of the Antichrist and the end times, that recognizing the hope that is within us, that we have been given through the discernment or understanding of the Bible, and then being prepared to explain that to those who don't know that hope. They've never heard it, or they've rejected it until such point as they're ready to listen. And this is interesting. It says with gentleness and respect, not with a 2x4 whacked on side of the head just to get their attention, as I'm sure some street preachers you may have seen done. First one I saw was in Seattle. It was pretty bold some years ago. So with gentleness and respect, if they ask you for a reason of that hope. So we must all take this forward as with confidence of the hope that's within us in order to be able to prepare for identifying the characteristics of the Antichrist.